about them?
Well, steps over the last 15 weeks. Actually, the last 15 weeks, we got 12 steps. One, because there was a holiday in it. And the second reason is that I believe, and I spoke to my sponsors, there's 12 steps. The 12th step of the 12 steps is never given enough time. We had a spiritual awakening as a result of doing the other steps. And then we carried this message to other alcoholics, which is the first 11 steps. Now comes the part that I believe is a question in itself. How do we practice these principles in all our affairs? And I got up this morning, I was thinking about that. I mean, I know what the books say, and I know what I've learned. I was thinking of how, you know, do we really practice these principles? So I was thinking of things to say this morning, and God is in infinite wisdom. I didn't ask God what to say. I opened up a book, and I want to start off this meeting with what the book says, instead of what I say. It's not AA proof literature, so bear with me. You're one of those. It says, practicing what you advocate. One Sunday, the brother of a minister, a physician, visited church service. At the conclusion, a lady said to him, "Sir, do you preach too?" "No, my brother preaches. I practice," was the reply. "Whatever you profess, faith in religion, medicine, or anything else, a living demonstration of your advocacy will speak louder than anything you say. It is not amiss, therefore, for us to say, preacher, live your sermon, physician, take your medicine. Then we shall listen. Practice is the best of all instructors." That was God's answer to my telling him what I was going to do today. And it was real good because I know a lot of people talk a program of recovery, but if you watch their feet, they can't give me pretty much what they have. It's what do I do with it, and not for the hour in this room. Excuse me. The 12 and 12 said, well, the big book says, that I needed to go through a psychic change, that I can see, do, and feel things that before I could not see, do, or feel. And that was the spiritual experience part. Then I was told to pass on what was so freely given to me to another alcoholic. Then I was told to practice these principles in all my affairs. There's a great chapter, I was talking to George before the meeting, about working with others. It tells us what to do on a 12-step call. And then if you go to certain groups, when they read the big book, they stop at the end of chapter 7, working with others, for the 12 steps. There's a couple of chapters that go after that, called To the Wives, The Employers, and A Vision for You. And those three chapters are just as important for learning some of the principles we carry into those prospective places that we live, work, and do. That's carrying other things as well as what we've learned in the other steps and throughout the big book, at least what I learned through a sponsor. So I believe that the first 164 pages, as it was told to me, is where the recovery is. Now, getting that knowledge, I was told, wouldn't keep me sober. Living that knowledge would, and would change how I live my life. And it says, the book in the very beginning says, we're going to discuss a design for living. It's a workbook for a design for living. It says, now comes the biggest question yet. What about practicing of the principles in all our affairs? Can we love our whole pattern of living as eagerly as we do some segment of it we discover when we try to help another alcoholic achieve sobriety? Can we bring the same spirit of love and tolerance into the sometimes deranged family lives that we bring into our AA group? Can we have the same kind of confidence and faith when these people have been infected and sometimes crippled by our own illnesses that we have in our sponsors? Can we actually carry the AA spirit into our daily work? Can we meet our newly recognized responsibility to the world at large? And can we bring a new purpose and devotion to religion of our choice? Can we find a new joy of living and trying to do something about all these things? Furthermore, we shall have to come to terms with seemingly failure and success. Can we now accept and adjust to either without despair or pride? Can we accept poverty, sickness, loneliness, bereavement, with courage and serenity, can we steadfastly content ourselves with a humbler, yet sometimes more durable satisfaction than the brighter, more glittering achievements are denied us? The answer, the AA answer to these questions about living is yes. All of these things are possible. We know this because we see monotony, pain, and even calamity turned into good use by those who keep trying to practice AA's 12 steps. And if these facts of life for many alcoholics who have recovered in AA, they can become facts of life for many more. Of course, all AAs, even the best, fall far short from such achievements as a constant thing. Without necessarily taking the first drink, we often quite get off the beam. Our troubles sometimes begin with indifference. We are sober and happy in our AA work. Things go well at home, in the office. We naturally congratulate ourselves on what later proves to be far too easy and superficial point of view. We temporarily cease to grow because we feel satisfied that there is no need for all of AA's 12 steps. We are doing fine with just a few of them. Maybe we are doing fine with only two of them, and they talk about two-stepping, the first step and the 12 step, about, you know, I'm powerless, let me fix you. How can I help you? Then perhaps life, as it has a way of doing, suddenly hands us a great big lump that we cannot begin to swallow, let alone digest. We fail to get a work for promotion, we lose a good job, maybe there is a serious domestic or romantic difficulties, or perhaps the boy we thought God was going, that God was looking after becomes a military casualty. It says, what then? We alcoholics in AA got or can we get the resources to meet these calamities we've come so many? There were problems of life which we could never face up to. Can we now, with the help of God, as we understand and handle them as well and bravely as our non-alcoholic friends often do? I'm going to stop here for a minute. You know, I got into this room and I remember my first Christmas and I didn't drink. And I went to my family and I wanted an attaboy. And I came to the rooms and I shared about it. And my sponsor turned around to me and says, I don't get it, George. People do this every day. Why are you looking for credit for what other people do on a regular basis? Just start doing what you're supposed to do. That's not where the credit comes from. So I always relate that one because the attaboys really don't matter. They really don't. At one time, that was real important to me. Today, credit is not that important. It's strange how that changed. And that changed because of doing the steps and then to applying the steps. And that's real important, that application part. Can we transform these calamities into assets, sources of growth and comfort to ourselves and those about us? Well, we surely have a chance if we switch from two-stepping to 12-stepping. If we are willing to receive the grace of God, which can sustain us and straighten us up in any catastrophe. There's so many things I want to talk about in this step that, you know, about the practice. I was kidding around with myself this morning. I said, well, I would talk about humility, but there wouldn't be enough people. Now there are too many, you know. That's where my head goes. And then I was going to talk about some of the things that I did, and then I got to remember my sponsor says, we don't brag about what we do, we just do it. So it's really hard for me to talk about how I practice the 12 steps outside of these rooms. I don't like to say, look what I'm doing. I just do what I was taught to do. The practicing of these principles in all my affairs. Well-grounded AAs seem to have the ability, by God's grace, to take those troubles in stride, turn them into demonstrations of faith. We have seen AAs suffer lingering and fatal illnesses with little complaint and often good cheer. But also, like others, we often discover the greater challenge, the lesser and more continuous problems in life. I went through a pretty serious accident 6 months ago, 8 months ago now, where I almost took my hand off, and that wasn't really the problem. The problem was, what do I do about not being able to tie my shoes? Or not being able, we were talking about this yesterday, the little things were the ones that were getting my head all confused. Handling the cut on my hand, I was powerless over it. I was in a brace, I was in a cast, I knew I couldn't do anything about it. But what I do about the things that I could do, that I used to be able to do, that I'm now not able to do? Well, I had to trust in a process that I didn't understand. One, I had to trust my doctor, which I'm glad I did because he's a wonderful doctor. Two, I had to trust my support group to make sure that I wasn't going off the beam of AA with the medications, and a sponsor to guide me through that, and the love of the fellowship to keep me grounded. And that's how I practice it. I went to others and asked for help. And it's amazing because unless somebody has in a situation like what I went through, it would be really hard for them to understand. I was at a gratitude dinner about a month ago, right out here on 136th Street. And there's a gentleman that walked over to me, and I can use his name because I know Ken real well, Ken Clark, those people who know anybody who does a lot of service for Alcoholics Anonymous. And he was standing with his hands behind me, and he was looking at, I had this robotic hand on, and it was going up and down, and he said, I'm real interested in this. And he told me, tell me what happened, so I proceeded to tell him exactly what happened to me. And he said to me, you know, it's amazing. If you turned around and had that happen 10 years ago, you'd look like this. He picked up his hand, and all his fingers were missing, and half his palm. But he had a wonderful recovery, and he makes jokes about that today. But he talked about the process of getting through it. And I've been talking to him on a regular basis now because he has gone through what I might have gone through, but the emotional part, he's going through exactly what I'm going through. And nothing is more vital for my permanent recovery than talking to somebody who's been there. So, you know, picking up that 10,000-pound phone sometimes is really tough. But I learned to practice that through a loving sponsor through these steps. And it says in here, our desires for emotional security and wealth, for personal prestige and power, for romance and family satisfaction, all these have to be tempered and redirected. We have learned that the satisfaction of instincts cannot be the sole end and aim of our lives. If we place instincts first, we've got the cart before the horse. We shall be pulled backward into disillusionment. And I don't want to tell you how many times that depression and other things in my sobriety have pulled me out of this program. And it wasn't for the grace of God and the people in this program that told me, you sure you're okay? No, I'm fine. Yeah, I was fine. I was so fine that I was ready to drink, but I wouldn't tell you that. And then somebody said to me, what's really going on? Nothing is more vital to my permanent recovery than another alcoholic talking to me. And then I tell you what's exactly going on. There's days I come in here, I don't want to smile, I'm hurting. But I don't go around the room and tell everybody I'm hurting, because I don't come here to cry about my physical ailment. It's the emotional stuff I need to talk to people about that I don't know how to deal with, that I never knew how to deal with. But when we are willing to place spiritual growth first, and then and only then do we have a real chance. So no matter what's going on in my life physically, I have to take care of that malady with a spiritual remedy. And that was what I was told in practicing these principles. When I don't place God first, I got it all wrong. I'll tell a story that happened this morning, and it's a great story because God walked into my life this morning. I have Ray, who's sitting right next to me, who's got a little bit of time right now. And I was in the car. I picked him up this morning because we were going somewhere to hear somebody else speak. And he looked at my hand and he said, where's the stone from your ring? A ring that I didn't think I was getting back from a relationship that had ended, but it was very sentimental to me. And the stone was missing, and it's an expensive stone. And I turned around to him and I said, well, if God wants me to find it, I'll find it, and if he don't, I'm not supposed to have it. And I was really, let go, things. And then I said, you know what, I'm going to ask God for a blessing right now. God, I'm going to ask you to come in and bless this, and if you want me to have it, you give it back to me. And if you don't want it, give me the acceptance to accept that it's gone. I said that, called my sister up on the phone, drove back to the house. She couldn't find it anywhere she looked. And we checked the car, normal stuff. And I already was at the acceptance point that I wasn't getting this back. It was gone. And Ray looked down on the floor next to the tire, and my sister's car was the stone. Mm-hmm. Gave it to my sister. I said, you go take care of it now. I'm not supposed to be wearing it today. That acceptance, and I tell the story of that because it leads back to a story of 6 years ago. I was doing a big book seminar with my friend Linda, and I had a concordance which is a book that talks about the big book. And in that, somebody walked out of the room with him when I went out for a cigarette at the time. And I was real angry. And I went to my sponsor and said, well, somebody might have needed it more than you did. Be grateful. I wasn't grateful, believe me. I was angry, I was upset. And he told me to go down and go try and buy another one. Well, the guy who was from Solomon in the Press was no longer making the book because he came down with an illness and he gave up the business. And nobody, and I called up everywhere I can go, and I went to Amazon.com and I went to Rare Book Collectors and I couldn't find it. 1 year after that, on my third anniversary, I'm sitting at an anniversary meeting, and somebody I know from Del Rey comes over to me and says, George, I know you must have one of these. So I proceeded to tell them the story. They turned around and handed me theirs. Their sponsor was the man who wrote the book. So God has a way of restoring things in ways that we never know where the miracles are coming from. When I practice letting God be in control instead of George being in control. Now, here's my controversial part of this step. And I got to read it because this is the part where it talks about boy meeting girl on AA campus. And I just want to read what it says because I'm one of those who likes what the book says, very much so, because it says a couple of things. First of all, it tells us we're immature, we're sensitive, and we're grandiose. That's what we are. at least that's what I am. I can't speak for anybody else out here. And that was something, and I was told when I first came in these rooms, it's not a program for snot-nosed kids. This is a program for men and women who need to grow up. And I didn't like that. And you hurt my feelings when you told me that. And I was taught that inappropriate behavior through the steps is always inappropriate. And then I always used to hear this thing, keep away from the women for a year. Don't get into relationships. I had a sponsor that said, the whole reason I'm here is because I had defective relationships with everybody around me. It's suggested, and it's not in the big book, and it's not in the 12 and 12, keep out of relationships, men with the women for a year, because experience over the years says that you don't have a relationship with yourself, you don't belong having one with somebody else. My sponsor used to say, you're sick, you don't have the right to make somebody sicker. Real simple. And I took that advice. And then at the end of the year, I said, am I ready yet? He said, well, some people need a year, you need five. And by God's grace, he didn't put somebody in my life in my first 7 years of recovery. And that was by God's grace. So I got to work on me. And that was the best gift that I was ever given in this program. The ability to work on me through a sponsor and through these steps. I have sponsors that come to me and says, well, I met Miss Wright. Even if it's wrong, it's right. And I always say to them, if you can live with the pain of the relationship and you don't drink, then I don't care what you do. I'm not here to tell you how to live your life in relationships. I'm here to guide you through the steps. So I watch a lot of people go through a lot of pain because they do things a little too fast. But we're alcoholics. We know better. And it says in here, when a man and a woman are physically, mentally, and spiritually compatible, there's nothing wrong with it. I will tell you, it took me, still taking me, a long time to get all three of those in line. But I'm learning to practice, not behaving in inappropriate behavior. The big book says we ask God to mold our ideas and help us live up to them. We remember always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, neither to be despised or loathed. I always ask, what's my motive? What am I really doing this for? What's really going on underneath? I have to ask those questions myself today. I didn't have that ability when I got here. I acted on instinct and inspiration, and it caused me a lot of pain. And I know the 10-step taught me that pain is the cornerstone of all spiritual growth. I know what the pains of drinking are, and I'm not willing to go back to that. I learned that before I learned sobriety. And the emotional turmoil, I was told I'd have to learn before surrender. And emotional sobriety, to me, is why I am here today. I'm not here learning not how to drink. I'm learning to stay in these rooms to learn how to live. And life is precious. Very precious. It's a commodity that we take for granted all the time. I've been blessed by a loving sponsor who's given me so many gifts. and so many people in these rooms who have helped me along this journey. Do I practice these principles in all my affairs? Don't listen to what I say, watch my feet. That's what I say to anybody who watches me, who knows me. You don't have to listen to what I tell you, watch what I do. And I tell you, to anybody in the rooms, if you're looking for a sponsor, watch what they do with other people. Watch how they live their lives outside of this room. I do not go in the parking lot and start cursing at cars when they're pulling out fast right after an AA meeting. I just don't do that anymore. I didn't do that when I got here because I didn't drive for 6 years. But I didn't do that when I first got here, and I'm not doing that now. I had a mouth that was like a sewer when I got here, and through the steps, and through a loving sponsor. I wouldn't walk into a doctor's office and use the kind of language that I hear sometimes in meetings. I wouldn't walk into a church and use it, or a shul, or whatever your preference or choice is. I wouldn't walk into the IRS and tell them that they owe me my money and give it to me in a certain way. I sure as heck am not going to do it in the room of Alcoholics Anonymous. I found a loving guy, and he cleaned up my mouth, and he cleaned up my act, and then he told me that I had to do this not only for an hour a day, but for 24 hours a day. And I fall short. I definitely fall short. But I do know one thing. I know what I was, you know, the fifth step taught me that humility is knowing exactly in who and what I am by a desire what I can be. And what I want to become is the person that carried the message to me. I want to be someone like you, who had all the love and understanding and tolerance and all those principles that are behind the steps, in the steps, around the steps. And the one principle that I live by is giving rather than getting will be the dividing principle. And that's in the big book. And I live by that principle today. And if I practice consideration and love, I'm doing what God wants me to do today. When I get selfish and self-centered, I'm doing what George wants me to do today. That pretty much wraps it up. Except for, I want to read something out of the big book, and then I want to thank you all, and I want to read this first. This 12 weeks have been really a pleasure for me, personally. It's taught me a lot more about my alcoholism, and at least I hope somewhere in these 12 weeks I've touched somebody's heart, because that's what I was told I need to do if I was to give away what was so freely given to me. And it says in the big book, in A Vision for You, on page 152, first time I'm telling anybody the page number, we have shown you how to get out from under. You say, yes, I'm willing, but am I to be consigned to a life which I shall be stupid, boring, and glum, like some righteous people I see? I know I must get along without liquor, but how can I? Have you a sufficient substitute? Yes, there's a substitute, and there's vastly more than that. It is the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. There you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. Thus we find the fellowship, and so shall you. How is this to come about, you ask? Where am I to find these people? You're going to meet these new friends in your own community. Near you, alcoholics are dying helplessly, like people on a sinking ship. You live in a large place, there are hundreds. High and low, rich and poor, these future fellows of Alcoholics Anonymous, the future fellows of Alcoholics Anonymous. Among them, you will make lifelong friends. You will be bound to them in a new and a wonderful ties. For thus you will be escaping disaster together, and you will commence shoulder to shoulder on your common journey. Then you will know what it means to give of yourself that others may survive and rediscover life. You will learn the full meaning of love thy neighbor and thyself, and I thank you. And that's it.